hey, you are wildly capable of great things. So take a deep breath, let it out. You've got this. I want to tell you guys today about Brandlink Media, a female-owned digital agency with years of experience working with businesses in Oklahoma and beyond on their branding, web design, email marketing, copywriting, and more. Remember, you are wildly capable of great things, and Brandlink Media is cheering you on. Visit www.brandlinkmedia.com to schedule a free consultation. Link in our show notes. It is my pleasure to introduce Dr. Jessica Rimmer, a partner at Giant and Solomon Strategic Advisors, a wife and mom of three. Jessica, tell us about a few defining moments of your life.
Thanks, Annie. I'm so excited to be here. When I think about defining moments, I think about all of my circles of influence. So I do think about becoming a mom. You know, you mentioned my kids. I think becoming a mom is one of the defining moments of my life. I have three kids, so I've become a mom three times. But I think before motherhood, I didn't always have the softer, gentler side of leadership. And so I think I attribute a lot of just my refinement as a leader to learning how to lead the little people that call me mom. I also think about just my roles in becoming a leader, right? My professional roles. I've always been a leader. I always kind of stepped into or fell into leadership voids. But in my professional career, I think about the first time that I got a title that felt too big for me, which honestly was the first time I was a director. I had the same feeling when I was named a dean. And in an academic scenario, that's a very it's a very weighty title. I felt the same way when I became the associate vice president. And I mean, I felt extremely that way when I became a vice president. So every time I got a title, I had the same sense that, oh my gosh, my feet don't touch the ground here. Am I really? It's that imposter syndrome. But that first time I got a, you know, really strong title at work was a director title. And I just felt like, man, people are going to figure out that I'm figuring this out as I go. So I think about that from a professional standpoint. And I'm happy to dive into whichever one of these you want me to describe the most. And the third defining moment that comes to mind is when I walked across the stage and got my PhD. That really is one of those penultimate, I know we're going to talk later about proudest moments, but where I actually achieved something that was super, super hard and required my best effort. I think for a lot of high achievers, you can do things really well and you can get accolades and you can get promotions and awarded for things that are not your best effort. But that defining moment of getting my PhD and, you know, having that hood put on and the diploma handed to me was really one of those moments where I thought, okay, I really can push myself beyond what I think is possible. And I needed to know that, right? Like I needed to know, and that was a defining moment both in ability and also in credentialing. So I would say those three are the three that come to mind as I think about defining moments. And I'm happy to share anything that you want to know about any of them.
This is so great for women who are starting out in their career and maybe already feeling that way. So tell us maybe a little bit about how you have overcome that feeling. You know, maybe the first time versus the last time, did that look different? Tell us how you overcame it.
You know, when I think about that central idea of like the sense that, oh my gosh, I've got this job and I'm not sure that I'm really as qualified as I need to be. I think that's a very common human experience. We do know from research that women have that sense more often than men do. Men tend to apply for jobs that they may not meet all the criteria for, and women have a viewpoint of themselves that we have to be overqualified to even apply. And so I know that for many women out there, they can resonate with that. In terms of overcoming, which was the core idea of your question, I think it's actually the repetition of experience that helped me recognize that the fear of maybe not having what it takes may not go away, but that fearlessness isn't required for success. You know, it doesn't, I don't need to be fearless to be effective. I need to do it anyway. Like, just because I'm afraid doesn't mean that somehow, somewhere, I really do have a flaw or I really am missing something. It's like, I can have confidence that in all of these experiences, I've been able to face my fear, and probably the presence of fear allowed me to dig down deep and give my best. Because I didn't have an inflated sense of self-confidence that allowed me to sit back and give less than my best.
That's amazing. This isn't a question that is on our script for today, but I'm just curious, what does your day-to-day look like in your current role?
Yeah, thanks. Great question. Because I'm a mom, I tend to start my day early and go completely full force until I can turn off. So it's like full speed ahead from about 5:15 in the morning. I usually start with a workout. If I don't work out 6 or 7 days a week, I work out, like, I try with a minimum of three to four days a week I work out. So I like to start with a workout. I always start with something to set my mind right. For me, as a believer in Jesus, like, I'm always starting out with something scriptural that's setting my mind right. But in my coaching practice, in my consulting practice, regardless of where anybody is, I'm always going, hey, what's your morning mindset routine? Because I think wherever our mind starts, mm-hmm. we have to set that for ourselves. Otherwise, other people will set that for us. Like, I don't start my morning with email. That is ludicrous for everyone that's out there doing that. I do not start my morning with Instagram. That would be insane. I don't need to compare myself to somebody else's vacation as the way I start my morning. I start my morning with my mindset routine. And then, you know, after that, I try to get ready as much as possible before my kids. And then it's just madness to get them to school. And then, I start my day with clients typically between 8:30 and 9. And I go all day long. I mean, all day long, I almost never take a break just because I try to get as much as I can into my workday so that I don't also work outside of my workday. Obviously, that is not like that. There's no perfect formula for that. But what I've learned in terms of that tension that we all live in between time and energy management is that if I can give the people in front of me the quality of my attention when I'm with them, then I am better. They are better. I'm accomplishing that reality I'm trying to accomplish. And so that discipline of putting as much as I can inside my workday and then respecting those boundaries has produced a better reality for my family, a better reality for my marriage. So, you know, I do kind of cut it off. And unless I'm in like a real project-based season where I'm needing to work odd hours, I keep it there. And I try to reject the sense of self-importance that I have to work all the time, that I need to always be plugged into answering emails. Although I'm just as guilty as anybody as looking at my email on vacation. So it's not a perfection thing. It's just like really trying to figure out what those boundaries are, respecting them and working in them so that, you know, my life and my productivity can be in harmony rather than in conflict.
That's amazing. So thank you for sharing all of that. Tell us, you know, when you face burnout as a busy mom and a career woman, you know, a wife, all of those responsibilities, where do you go to refill your cup and get fresh inspiration?
Yeah. So I love that you're asking this question because I think burnout is so common. I think post-COVID, it's so common. I think people are like revenge quitting their jobs because they're burned out. And so, the thing that I have tried to do related to burnout, and then I'm really going to answer your question, but is to learn to see it coming, right? I had to learn what my signs and signals were and so that I don't burn out, right? Like, I think burnout, when I get there, I tend to crash and then I need recharge. That's like sleeping and, you know, alone time that maybe I really can't do, right? Like if you're a mom of littles, like mine are 9, 6, and 2, alone time is kind of a joke. You don't go to the bathroom by yourself, you know? So like if I get into the space of burnout where the only thing that works is alone time, or I mean, I'm joking, I don't really, spa days don't recharge me, but if I get there, I'm almost in like an emergency room scenario. So I have to see it coming to where I'm recharging little by little every day so that I don't burn out any day. And so for me, it's like music is really, really recharging. Reading something interesting is really, really recharging. But I have to pay attention to my soul because it's not always the same thing that works every time. Right. Sometimes it's learning that will help me. Oh, I needed to think about it differently. I need to learn. Sometimes it's gratitude practice. Sometimes it's talking to my spouse and going, hey, I feel like I'm about to start crying because the kids are not in bed and it's 8:30 and I really need them to be in bed. Right. Like it's verbalizing what I need is sometimes a tactic that I use, but I have had to come up with like a basket of things that work so that I can choose out of that basket, because in my current reality, I can't rely on one single strategy to fight burnout.
That is so helpful. I feel like what you're describing, you know, fighting it in the day-to-day is something I'm just now learning in my life. And I really appreciate you putting like a name on that because it's something I've struggled with, just sort of the ping pong of overworking. And then actually in the beginning, when I first started a business, sort of enforcing hours for myself, and I wasn't working enough at that point, and then I kind of overdid it, and you know, finding that balance is so difficult. So thank you for articulating that for all of us. And for our next question, when you look to your future, whether it's personal or professional, what do you see?
It's a great question. I think being able to visualize a future is so important. For some of us, it's like the most important thing to be able to see the future. And I've had so many different spaces in my life where I couldn't see to the future. One of the things that is really motivating to me is I see a family where my kids want to come hang out with me, right? Like that's one of my big future focused goals. I want my kids to want to come home and want to bring their kids home. I want to be the fun house when they get into high school. Now, here's the challenge. I don't think I'm that fun. Like I enjoy working more than I enjoy hanging out. And so like I'm working hard right now to build the kind of relationships with my kids where they're going to talk to me and where they're going, you know what I mean? So like that kind of stuff, when I think about family, when I think about marriage, I'm doing things right now based on that desire to still, when my kids move out of the house, I want to still like my spouse. So I see us having a vibrant relationship. From a professional standpoint, what I am working on right now is replicating and coaching team members to be able to be better at the kind of work I do than what I do. So I'm building out a team. It requires a significantly different kind of work style than I normally do. I like to work by myself. I like to go fast and alone. But when I see the future of what my business can be and what my professional impact needs to be, I need to be building relationships and coaching into people now if that future is going to happen. And so I also really want to complete a book. I've got a book draft started. And so I would love to add author to my LinkedIn. Like that would be a, you know, kind of a silly detail future, but I'm going to say it anyway. But that's what I see, is I see life, I see freedom, but I see impact. To me, that's one of the most important things to be able to see and visualize into the future, is what's the impact of the work that I'm doing now? What's it going to deliver to the world? How's the world going to be better for me having, you know, built a team of people who are focused on healthy leadership? What's that going to do in the world? Well, hopefully that means that organizations are running more effectively, but hopefully that also means that that team of people has a really vibrant and productive life, that they too have families that are working, that they too have marriages that are working, that they too have businesses that are really being successful. So it's that multiplying effect is what I hope to see in the future.
Yes, meaningful work is, yeah, so important, and that's really amazing. I'm sure that it's going to have a ripple effect. So tell us, for our last question, what is your proudest moment?
My proudest moment really is, so when I got my PhD, which I know I said earlier in terms of a defining moment, but I have this series of pictures on my Facebook, totally wide open. People can go find them. But I was 8 months pregnant with our third baby whenever I walked across the stage. And when I defended my dissertation, I was huge. I had on a blazer and this cute black dress and this huge basketball belly. But my proudest moment, I think, is really, I have all these pictures of my little kids standing next to me and I'm standing in my regalia. And I'm just like, I'm really proud that I did that. And I did it as a mom. And I did it for my kids to be able to remember it. There's this funny little picture of my oldest. He was, he was littler, obviously. And he has my little pompadour hat on, standing in the parking garage before graduation. And he thinks he's being Harry Potter. Like, that's what he thought he was doing, right? But to me, I'm like, I am setting a legacy, not just for my son, because I think there's a lot of pathways for my son, right? But for my daughters, to see that you can do anything. You can do anything. There may be barriers, but we can blow them up. And I think I set that example by finishing something that I started that was so hard and required the best of me.
100 Magazine is a publication featuring 100 wildly capable women in Oklahoma City. Buy the magazine to read all 100 interviews at 100mag.com. Wildly Capable Woman podcast is produced by Sugar Free Media. You can check out our daily news podcast, News Du Jour, for a calmer space to consume the news. Music is by Joey Lavoie and Nicholas Foster. Please consider rating and reviewing this podcast if it meant something to you to help us reach other wildly capable women.